Morning scripture reading will be coming from the book of 2 Peter, chapter 2, verses 4 through 10. I'll be reading from the New International. If you'd like to follow along, please open your Bibles. For if God did not spare angels when they sinned, but sent them to hell, putting them into gloomy dungeons to be held for judgment, if he did not spare the ancient world when he brought the flood on its ungodly people, but protected Noah, a preacher of righteousness, and seven others. If he condemned the cities of Sodom and Gomorrah by burning them to ash and made them an example of what was going to happen to the ungodly, and if he rescued Lot, a righteous man who was distressed by the filthy lives of lawless men, for that righteous man living among them day after day was tormented in his righteous soul by lawless deeds he saw and heard. If this is so, then the Lord knows how to rescue godly men from trials and to hold the unrighteous for the day of judgment while continuing their punishments. This is especially true for those who follow the corrupt desire of the sinful nature and despise authority.
Thank you, Brother Tim, for that reading that comes from 2 Peter that brings before our mind a couple of Old Testament examples that we would like to think about this morning, that the examples of Noah and the example of Lot, two are mentioned by Peter in close connection to the point that he's making in 2 Peter chapter 2. Raising children is really a life-changing event in people's lives, all-encompassing, very time-devoting task. It takes you from being like free as a bird and on your own to buckle down with the responsibility that you have when you bring children into the world. No parent would really deny the supreme joy involved in bringing children into the world and how wonderful of a blessing that they truly are. But neither can we deny the perplexity and the frustration, the uncertainty that attends our efforts in trying to see that we raise children that won't end up in the penitentiary or the jail, that won't end up in the grave prematurely because of a wicked lifestyle, that will not have problems and diseases associated with living impure and unholy lives in our community. Fortunately, God has supplied dazed and confused parents with both spiritual instruction and insightful examples in the Scriptures. Spiritual instruction, first, from Deuteronomy 6, I read, "You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your might. These words which I command you today shall be on your heart. You shall teach them diligently to your sons, and shall talk of them when you sit in your house, and when you walk by the way, and when you lie down, and when you rise up. You shall bind them as a sign on your hand, and they shall be as frontals on your forehead. You shall write them on the doorposts of your house and on your gates." Proverbs 22 and verse 6, "Train up a child in the way he should go. Even when he is old, he will not depart from it." Ephesians 6 and verse 4, "Fathers, do not provoke your children to anger, but bring them up in the discipline and the instruction of the Lord." Spiritual instruction is admonished to parents by God. Also, very insightful examples into how that is done. Romans 15 and verse 4 says, "For whatever was written in earlier times was written for our instruction, so that through perseverance and encouragement of the Scriptures we might have hope." So if we begin to look around at the society and think about how bad it is and feel the weight of responsibility that's on us to raise our children, be encouraged. Be uplifted. Have hope, because there is encouragement in the Scriptures. in Romans 15 and verse 4. Now, some might think that it would have been really, really nice if God had just somewhere in His will, as described for us in written pages, left parents a children-rearing manual that describes every situation, that helps us to know exactly what fits every situation with our children, every discussion that we have with them, every example that we show them, so that we might lead them in a right and godly way. Maybe it would have been nice if God offered us a detailed account of rearing some godly man like David or like John the Baptist. You know, did Jesse, David's father, approve of his taste in music? Or was he always telling him to tone it down? You know, to what extent did he do things? Did he say things? Did he exemplify things in the life of David that made David the man that he was? And what about Zechariah, John's father? Did he set a curfew for his son? Or you know, what were things that he did, that steps that he took, instructions that he gave, that would ensure that his son turned out to be a righteous man? But God really didn't leave us that type of comprehensive account about child rearing. Maybe specific things that worked for them in their situation may not work in our situation. They might be different for us. We're not raising a David. We're not raising a John. But I want to suggest to you that God certainly gave us what we need to raise our children to be righteous and God-fearing people. He gave us what we need to be successful. And I think that we can see that as we look at if we just pick out a couple of families here that the Bible presents exemplary for us and make some points from those, we can understand that God has given us principles that will help us to accomplish that task. So this morning, let's consider two families: Noah's family and Lot's family. Very interestingly, there are similarities between these two families. Both families dwelt in environments that were basically wicked and ungodly. Both had righteous men as the family's head. And God ended up delivering both of these from cataclysmic events. Yet Noah's boys and Lot's girls appear to be very dissimilar in the end. So maybe by that contrast, there's something that we can learn that can be of benefit for us. So, three simple points in the lesson this morning, taken from Noah's boys and Lot's girls, that will help, I think. And the first one is that spiritual wisdom is important. Parents, spiritual wisdom on your part is very important to ensure that your children come up to be responsible people who love God. Spiritual wisdom is very important. In Genesis 13, verses 8 and following, Lot's family and Abraham's family, they're related, but there's some difficulty with regard to they're crowding each other. And so Lot focuses on the cities of the plain of Jordan. We are told in the scriptures that the citizens of Sodom were exceedingly wicked in God's eyes, and that Lot was personally appalled by their wickedness. That's exactly what Peter's writing about when in our text for today in 2 Peter 2. If he rescued righteous Lot, oppressed by the sensual conduct of unprincipled men. For by what he saw and heard, that righteous man, while living among them, felt his righteous soul tormented day after day by their lawless deeds. That's what Peter wrote about Lot's situation. So he was personally appalled by their wickedness. But at the same time, he took his family and moved them closer and closer and closer to those people until he lived right smack dab in the middle of them. That was unwise. He took them to this godless place simply because it was a good business move. He was motivated more by worldly wisdom than by spiritual concern, just as some are today. Some may take a promotion and move somewhere where God's people don't even meet on the first day of the week. Notice the progression of his move. The first we learn about Lot, we read that in chapter 13 and verse 12 that he pitched his tent toward Sodom. And then in chapter 14, he dwelt in Sodom. And then by chapter 19, when the record reveals the visit from the divine visitors, he has a house in Sodom. You see, he moved closer and closer to the epicenter of the wickedness that he detested. Well, what's the big deal? Can't people live and raise their families in a society like that without being tainted by it? Yes, they can, but that would be the exception. That certainly wasn't true in Lot's case. So, what happened to his family as a result of a failure to follow spiritual wisdom, to allow spiritual wisdom to be the priority in his decision making? What did he have to suffer as a result of that? Well, in the first place, some of his daughters died in Sodom. From Genesis 19, 14 through 15, the married ones, evidently, Lot went out and spoke to his sons-in-law, who were to marry, or literally in the marginal note, who were married to his daughters, and said, "Get up out of this place, for the Lord will destroy the city." The response on the part of his sons-in-law, but he appeared to his sons-in-law to be jesting, joking, making a joke, playing a joke on them. When morning dawned, the angels urged Lot, saying, "Up, take your wife and your two daughters who are here, or you will be swept away in the punishment of the city." They told him this inside of his house. So there were some members of his family that he was unable to persuade to leave in view of the impending judgment of God. His wife died because she looked back. His wife, from behind him, looked back and she became a pillar of salt in Genesis 19 and verse 26. Well, he escaped with two of his daughters, but they ended up sacrificing their virginity to their father and bore children by their father and enticed their father into drunkenness. In Genesis 19, beginning in verse 30, Lot went up from Zoar and stayed in the mountains, and his two daughters with him, for he was afraid to stay in Zoar, and he stayed in a cave, he and his two daughters. Then the firstborn said to the younger, "Our father is old, and there is not a man on earth to come into us after the manner of the earth. Come, let us make our father drink wine, and let us lie with him, that we may preserve our family through our father." In verse 36, thus both the daughters of Lot were with child by their father. Now, what would have happened to this family had Lot embraced spiritual wisdom and let that be the priority that would govern every decision that he would make in his life? That he first gave recognition to God and his will, and what would be the best spiritually for my family and then for me? What if he acted that way? What if he made his choices in life that way? Would situations have been different with his family? Would he have preserved all of his children alive? Would he have preserved his wife alive? You have to wonder, you have to think about that, don't you? But in that example, you can see the importance of spiritual wisdom and what happens when you don't have it. Secondly, an active faith makes a very strong impact on our children. Noah spent years proclaiming righteousness of God and preparing the vessel that would save his family from an event that was absolutely unimaginable by his peers during his day in Genesis 7. His boys saw a father who trusted in God so completely that he built this incredible boat out in the middle of dry land to receive an unbelievable collection of animals. What a ridiculous thing for a man to do in thinking about it in terms of worldly wisdom. Imagine the ridicule and the scorn that they must have endured all those years while they were building that ark and while Noah was preaching righteousness to those people. But Noah was resolute in his faith, and he must have inspired some good measure of trust in his sons, Shem, Ham, Japheth, because God delivered the boys and their wives as well from the cataclysmic destruction of the flood. A contrast, if you will, Noah's active faith with Lot's fear and hesitation. Granted, Lot was righteous. Peter calls him righteous in 2 Peter 2. But study what Lot did. Notice that Lot gravitated repeatedly toward population clusters, probably because it was a good business enterprise for him. It was profitable. It helped expand his wealth. But in doing that, he moved closer and closer to ungodly people, wicked people, evil people. Genesis 13 and 12, Lot settled in the cities of the valley and moved his tents as far as Sodom. Genesis 14 and 12, they took Lot, Abraham's nephew, and his possessions and departed, for he was living in Sodom. Genesis 19, verse 19, behold, your servant has found favor in your sight. And you have magnified your loving kindness, which you've shown me by saving my life following the fleeing from Sodom with his two daughters. But I cannot escape to the mountains, which he was instructed to do. For the disaster will overtake me and I will die. Now behold, this town, you see, a center of population, this town is near enough to flee to, and it is small. Please let me escape there. Is it not small, that my life may be saved? And he said to him, behold, I grant you this request also, not to overthrow the town of which you have spoken. The town is Zoar. You see, he gravitated toward those population centers. There's a price to pay when you do that. There's a consequence. And great care must be taken when that is the case. Notice, secondly, that he attempted to appease the Sodomites when they came to his house beating on his door, demanding to have sexual relations with his male visitors. Notice in his attempt to appease them and get them to stop the aggravation, he offered his virgin daughters to them. Now behold, I have two daughters who have not had relations with man. Please let me bring them out to you. And do to them whatever you like. Only do nothing to these men inasmuch as they have come under the shelter of my roof. What person thinks that way who is filled with spiritual wisdom? Notice that even when he is told by divine visitors that he must leave the city, there's hesitation on his part. When divine warning came to him, leave now, he hesitates. In Genesis 19 and verse 15, when morning dawned, the angels urged Lot, saying, "Up, take your wife and your two daughters who are here, or you will be swept away in the punishment of the city." But he hesitated. So the men seized his hand and the hand of his wife and the hands of his two daughters, for the compassion of the Lord was upon him, and they brought him out and put him outside the city. They had to grab hold of him and make him leave his house because the Lord had grace shown to him. He hesitated to leave. He didn't accept the divine warning as reality, as truth, and I better listen to it and do what it says. And then he begged God not to send him to the mountains. He said, if I go to the mountains, some disaster will befall me there and I'll die. Now, look at this town. It's nearby and it's small. It's not a big one. Let me go there. Let me escape there. Let me be there. And so he seeks to alter God's plan for him. God allowed him to do that out of his gracious care for Lot. Lot was righteous. God delivered him. But his faith was something that was really far from monumental. It is little wonder that his wife and his daughters did not appear to share the abhorrence of wickedness that was really deep inside of him. It is little wonder that his sons-in-law ridiculed him when he came to give them a divine warning. It is little wonder that 10 righteous souls could not be found in that city where Lot lived and had an influence among other people. That's a scathing commentary on the lack of effect of Lot's influence on the inhabitants of the city. We must do more than simply despise evil in our hearts. Faith that is active is what makes an impact. And that's what makes an impact on our children if we intend for them to be lovers of God and servants of righteousness. And the third and final point that we'd like to consider in the lesson this morning. Parents have to guard their personal character very closely. You know, the thing about bringing children in the world and watching them grow and watching them develop, one unique thing about that is they watch everything you do. And they listen to every word that you say. And they imitate what you do. And they repeat the words that you say. So you have to give a special measure of attention to what you say and what you do, knowing that your children are going to pick that up. Lot's girls seem to have been exposed to a pattern of inconsistency. How would you feel, for example, if you're a young girl, how would you feel if your father offered you to a mob of sexually perverted rioters? How would that make you feel? It wouldn't be good, would it? His sons-in-law considered his warnings to be a joke. He hesitated to leave even after divine warnings. He couldn't stop his wife from looking back. He was afraid of the mountains, though God had delivered him from a horrible destruction. Fire and brimstone raining down on these cities from heaven. God delivered him from that. Would God allow him to be destroyed in the mountains somewhere? Certainly not. He allowed himself to become drunken before his girls. And maybe their incest and maybe their sinful reasoning is really not all that a surprise to us by what they had been through. There seems to be a pattern of inconsistency there. Now, on the other hand, Ham, a son of Noah in Genesis 9, really manifests contempt and disregard for his father, which he should never have done. Extreme honor was demanded toward the patriarch of a family in those days, and Noah was exactly that. But his contempt and disregard is seen in Genesis 9:20-25. Noah began farming, and he planted a vineyard, we're told by the text. He drank of the wine and became drunk and uncovered himself inside his tent. Ham, the father of Canaan, saw the nakedness of his father and told his two brothers outside. But Shem and Japheth took a garment and laid it upon their shoulders and walked backward and covered the nakedness of their father. And their faces were turned away so that they did not see the nakedness of their father. When Noah awoke from his wine, he knew what his youngest son had done to him. So he said, "Cursed be Canaan. A servant of servants he shall be to his brothers." Now, no doubt, Ham harbored some dishonor to his father. Yet Noah's lack of self-control offered the opportunity for him to display the irreverence that he had and the mockery that he had toward his father. Maybe Ham was looking for some inconsistency in his father. And here was a blatant example of that inconsistency. And so he just picked it up and used it to ridicule and belittle rather than honor and respect his father. Maybe that was the case. Maybe no such ground for criticism had existed with Noah until this point in time. But in any case, whatever the details were, whatever they were, parents must guard their characters continually. It's very important. Children are watching. Another final thing that we might think about in connection with this. A child eventually chooses his own character. A child makes his own way. When you raise them and you teach them and you do everything that you can possibly do to be the right example before them, to give them the right instruction, then ultimately, they reach a point in their lives where they're independent and they're on their own and they make choices that they must live with. Choices that have consequences. Every child eventually chooses his own character. Much like the prodigal son, who went to his father and said, "I want my inheritance. I want to go and live my life. I want to do what I want to do. And I want to leave the family property." And that's exactly what he did. He chose his own character. It's difficult to tell whether Noah's boys before the flood were as righteous as their father. Some may claim that God saved them just for Noah's sake. But Shem and Japheth appear to imitate their father's godliness in the reverence they show for their father in Genesis 9 that we talked about a minute ago. But Ham's another story. He's over 100 years old with at least four boys of his own when he reveals his father's sin. And so now his character is his own to pursue. And he pursues ungodliness on this occasion. And maybe this is an indication of the moral fabric that is in this man, this grown man by this time. Though Noah was wrong in his drunkenness, Ham was now old enough to choose his own path and let his own character proceed from his heart to the actions and the behavior in his life. Noah had provided a godly example to these boys. "God saved my father from the flood." Who else could make such a statement as that? But as with Noah and Ham, parents can only provide their children with the foundation of faith. Instruction, evidence, examples, admonishing, correction, discipline. Those things are what parents provide for their children. But there are no guarantees whatsoever that they will turn out to be people who love God and trust God. There are no guarantees. We can't give them our faith as we would give them a gift. We're not able to do that. They may seem as if they have faith in trying to imitate us sometimes. And it may not be there. We can't give it to them like a gift. They have to develop it for themselves. They have to become believers for themselves. They have to embrace God's Word for themselves. They have to cultivate within their lives a love for things holy, righteous, and good, for the truth, and for the God of heaven who provides salvation for them. They have to do that. And they must want to do that for themselves, or they will not. And that seems somewhat frustrating to parents. But my children need to love God by their choice and not by mine. If they're just imitating my faith in their lives, it's not genuine and it's not real. They have to have their own. There are other lessons here and elsewhere in God's book, and God really knows that parents need help raising their children and that their children need help from their parents. Let's work hard to offer our boys and our girls every opportunity to survive in this world, a world which is hard, cold, cruel, and wicked. Let's show them the love, the warm love of a loving home and a home that appreciates and loves God. We owe it to them and we owe it to God. We can help you today to walk closer to God than you walked when you first came into this building. We'd be delighted to do that. If you've become a believer that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of God, we'll hear your confession that He is. We'll hear you confirm that you're willing to repent of sins in your life, and that you want to be baptized in water for the remission of sins, as the Bible teaches. You can leave here as a Christian in fellowship with God and fellowship with God's people. We can help you do that today. We can pray with you. We can pray for you. In any way we can help you walk closer to God, we'd be delighted to do that. There's no better place to be today than among God's people who help you and encourage you, pray with you and for you. If we can do that, please come and let us know while we stand together and encourage you by singing this song.